Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Turn the Page podcast, and we are welcoming back one of our favorite guests. Please tell us who you are and about your latest book.
Oh, yeah, this is Grady Hendricks. I'm the author of books like My Best Friend's Exorcism and The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. And my new book out on July 13th is The Final Girl Support Group, which is, you know, it's about final girls. And if listeners don't know what those are, final girls are the women who survive a horror movie, mostly intact. They're the ones who sort of, you know, get away from the incredibly slow moving killer with the impractical weapon, kill him, and then often get taken away in an ambulance screaming, or, you know, put in the back of a police car, or run into the arms of their worried boyfriend or something, and sometimes just stare off into the middle distance, numb. And I always sort of wondered what happened to those women next, like what happens the next day, and how do you sort of live the rest of your life in the shadow of the worst thing that can possibly happen to you? And so the Final Girl Support Group was the way I sort of worked through that. It's about these women 20 years later, and some of them are doing great, and some of them are in a lot of denial, and some of them are doing great when they drink enough vodka, and others aren't doing well at all. And they have a group therapy the session, and someone starts to kill the women in this, these final girls in their group therapy session one by one.
So I thought there were a lot of clever things about this book. But the first thing I want to mention is, I mean, I guess other than Horror Store, because My Best Friend's Exorcism and The Southern Guide to Book Club Guide to Slaying Vampires took place in the same neighborhood, which I think you've mentioned is based on your own neighborhood growing up. Was it hard to depart for this one?
Well, you know, Horror Store was set in Cleveland, Cleveland, and We Sold Our Souls was in sort of the Lehigh Valley area of Pennsylvania. And so this is LA. This is actually easier. I lived in LA for about a year and a half. So that was actually relatively simple. But yeah, I mean, it's always, I do a lot of research, and usually my research is about very specific, either jobs someone has, or a lot of times it's about geography, like where things are and how they fit together. And so a lot of this book research was geography.
Excellent. I was not necessarily expecting an LA story. Oh. Not that it was bad, because it actually fits very well into the fact that final girls are a product of show business. But what kind of research did you do into that? Are there any like actual final girls, you don't have to name names, in the true crime world?
No, I mean, final girls, really, I mean, that term was coined by Carol Clover when she wrote a book called Men, Women, and Chainsaws.
Which is a wonderful book, by the way. I love it so much. It's one of the few books from college that I did not sell back to the bookstore, because I just knew I wanted to have it on my shelf.
Yeah. And you know, I think it had been used before then, but she's the first person, I think, who really defined it. And so, I mean, when you look at real life final girls, it would be pretty grim. I mean, it'd be survivors of school shootings, people who survived their whole family being murdered, people like Elizabeth Smart who were abducted and escaped. Yes. Like, it's really, I mean, that's somewhere I didn't want to go. I think, you know, the stuff I'm talking about with these women has a lot more to do with, sort of entertainment, and a lot less to do with PTSD and sort of individual trauma over absolutely horrific things happening to you. So yeah, as far as real life final girls, I don't think there are any who would get that classification. And one of the things I also really, for the book, I really want to talk about is that I always found really, and there's one reason I guess I'm really fascinated by final girls in movies, is I was always really interested in how there was always a sequel. You know, they'd have these, like, you know, you look at Friday the 13th, and Alice Hardy, who's played by Adrienne King, you know, she escapes, she kills Mrs. Voorhees. It's traumatic, but she's okay. And then the sequel. And the first thing that happens is she's murdered. You look at Halloween H2O, which I think is Halloween 7, technically. And you look at Jamie Lee Curtis, and she has this great ending with Michael Myers and has all this closure. And then the next movie begins and she gets killed by him. Right? It's incredibly cruel. And it's kind of like the one unstoppable killer these women can't defeat is the forces of market capitalism that insists there is a sequel. As long as these movies make money, they keep going.
Right. And that was one thing I thought was super interesting about how you frame the story. So you have the Final Girl support group, and there have been movies based on each of their traumas, and right. There are websites devoted to it, and there are people on Reddit complaining about the fact that people still care about them and that they're all old now. It's very expansive, and it felt very real. It felt like bringing the idea of entertainment to reality in a very good way, but not in the way that you were talking before, where you
right.
talk about, you know, like the PTSD and the grim real life things that happen. You know, you're thinking about them in terms of with the framing of these slasher films, but some of the films that were made are crazy. So you have like your typical camp slasher, which actually right. is sort of the restart of everybody else's, because the final girl for that one is
Adrienne.
Yeah. And Adrienne's story, even though Adrienne is not really the final girl whose eyes we see everything through, her story sort of jump starts the rehashing of everything.
Right.
And, but then you have something, you know, like, what was it? Gnome Coming.
Yeah. Well, Gnome Coming's funny. So that is one that belongs to the Canadian final girl, because, you know, slasher movies got their start in Canada, in the 70s and 80s for about 10 years. The Canadian government would let a producer deduct their entire production budget from a movie from their taxes. And so lots and lots, I think it was like 250 of these so-called tax shelter movies got made in Canada. So the very first, I mean, there are earlier examples. I mean, some people, there's a movie called 13 Women from the 30s. It's very slasher-like. There's Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock from 1960. But really the first sort of proto-slasher was Black Christmas. Which is a Canadian movie, which was one of these tax shelter movies. And then movies like Prom Night and My Bloody Valentine, those were tax shelter movies in Canada. So I wanted to make sure we had a tax shelter movie. So I gave that one Final Girl is Canadian. The Gnome Coming, which is the Canadian slasher. But I also, you know, there's also those leprechaun movies, which follow something of the slasher formula. And there's a certain number of movies that have these like weird supernatural elements, like Child's Play and stuff, where it's like some kind of crazy animatronic or special effect killer. So I made it a gnome in that one. I just couldn't resist.
Yeah, those movies are, I don't know, they're terrible in their way, but they're also endearing in their way.
The leprechaun films?
Yeah, like all of those strange...
Yeah, the leprechaun movies, they're a lot more boring than I remember them, but they do have they're super self-aware. I mean, they're very much linked to the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, which is really the sort of like over the top, full of showmanship, very self-aware, very ironic franchise, you know? All the franchises have their weird own personalities. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street's always very extravagant and over the top. The Friday the 13th movies are always very campy, for not to make too horrible of a pun. Halloween.
I just got that. I have not had enough coffee today.
The Halloween franchise is so completely humorless. Like, it really is the franchise that there are no jokes. And the leprechaun ones are the ones that are super duper, you know, corny. You know, they're sort of the bottom of the barrel in terms of like everything's a meta joke.
I just recently found out, because I think I've mentioned in other interviews that I've come to horror late in life. I didn't really get into it until I was in college, although I was definitely horror curious as a child. I was just too much of a wimp to really dive into it. I recently found out that, are you familiar with Troll at all?
Oh, sure. Troll 1 and 2.
Troll 2 had Noah Hathaway, who was best known for Atreyu in The NeverEnding Story. And yeah. He played a character named Harry Potter Jr. I read that and I was like, there's so much to unpack in just that small bit. For numerous reasons.
Those Troll movies, you got to watch out for Nilbog. Don't drive there.
But
you know, and that's sort of what you were talking about a minute ago. You know, these movies have taken on their own kind of fandom and their own sort of universe. I mean, look at Troll 2, which, you know, the documentary about it's become this big deal and it gets screened all over the place as sort of this like almost audience participation movie. For some reason, more than almost any other kind of horror movie, slashers really develop this strange fandom. And it's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because I really was like, what does it mean to sort of have spent so many years of your life watching people get murdered for fun? Like, I don't know, you know, like, why?
Yeah, it's a very good point. And it makes me wonder, because it does. And there are people who will, you know, again and again. And I went through a whole period of time where I loved just watching slasher movies.
Right. And when you think about it, slasher movies are really, they're sort of, as much as we think of them as sort of these funny, you know, we think of Scream and all the meta jokes in there, or, you know, Jason mowing through some camp counselors, and they become really like all this shorthand, you know, and oftentimes shorthand for what people don't like about horror. Oh, it's these women getting killed for having sex and all this. When we think about it, though, slasher movies are the most realistic horror movie out there. I mean, okay, yes, by the end, Jason is a zombie. You know, Michael Myers is a druid, curse is somewhere in there.
And of course, with Freddy, like everybody, you know, every school worker sells their soul to a nightmare demon after getting attacked by parents for doing horrific things. So,
right. But when you get down to basics, they are movies about a man with a weapon, walking methodically through a place that's supposed to be safe, like a school or a summer camp or a dormitory, and killing everyone they see. Yeah. And that's the reality we live with on a daily basis these days. I mean, kids grow up doing active shooter drills and, you know, from first grade on, I think. And so you really wonder, like, what does it mean that we watch these movies and make these movies and love these movies, you know?
Right.
And that was really what I was trying to figure out for myself, writing this book, you know, like just what was I doing? Like spending so much of my life watching people get murdered for entertainment.
Like as far as the idea, cause you know, you were talking about, you know, how did you decide to have like this whole support group? How did you decide to bring that together?
Oh, it was just, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big horror movie buff, and we were just joking about how there should be a support group for Final Girls. And the next morning I woke up sober and was like, that's still a really good idea.
So the Final Girls in the group, there's Lynette,
the narrator,
and we mentioned Adrian, who she's Black in real life, but in the films she's not depicted as Black,
right?
And then there's a slew of others who have their own personalities and their own traumas and how they deal with it. Like there's the perfect Southern wife.
Oh, yep, Marilyn.
Yes, and then there's Julia Prescott. Kudos for that name. Wait, was it Julia Campbell or Julia Prescott? Now I'm trying to remember.
Julia Campbell.
It was Julia Campbell, right? Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Julia Campbell, right?
Yeah, but she's, you know, Neve Campbell, who plays Sydney Prescott in Scream, also yes. played Julia Salinger in Party of Five, which is right. a TV show I was obsessed with in university. Oh. So, like every name in this book. Mm-hmm. If you're a horror movie fan, you'll recognize it. I really, just because slashers get so self-referential and the fandom is so strong, I wanted to have lots of Easter eggs for people to find in here who are really into this stuff. But I mean, you don't need to know them to enjoy the book. But yeah, I tried to pay a little tribute. I mean, Adrian is, you know, named after Adrian King, who sort of to a lot of extent, many intents and purposes. The first final girl, she's the final girl in Friday the 13th part yeah. one. And Adrian's, I know Adrian, she's pretty chuffed about having a character named after her. But, you know, Marilyn Burns played Sally Hardesty in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
You know, Julia is very, very, I mean, her sort of horror movie thing is very meta. It's very self-referential. It's very similar to the Scream franchise in some ways. I mean, there are all these little bits, you know, but even down to police officers, people's names on reports, if people start Googling those, they'll go down rabbit holes that I planted for them.
So how was this is actually, I noticed, is this the first book that is published not by Quirk?
Yeah. It's with Berkeley.
With Berkeley. Was the process very different?
Yeah, well, Quirk isn't an imprint of Penguin Random House, but Penguin Random House handles their distribution. Okay. So yeah, but Berkeley is an imprint of Penguin Random House. You know, it was interesting. The thing about it that's weird with this book is usually it takes me a couple of, I would say 10 months to write a book, sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little shorter. This book, I looked at the first draft recently and it was January 9th of 2014. And originally I'd written this book because I wanted it to be the book after My Best Friend's Exorcism. And I wound up writing Paperbacks from Hell instead. And, when I gave it to my editor at Quirk, literally, I think that week, the announcement had hit trades that Riley Sager's Final Girls book was coming out, and he just was not interested in this, which I get. And so I rewrote this over the years and rewrote this and went back to him a few years later, and he was still like not interested. And I just kept working at this book. And eventually my manager, who does a lot of my, I do a fair amount of screenwriting work, he read it. And he was wondering if I had anything that was unpublished, and he read it and really liked it. And so I rewrote it a few times and then went out with it again just in 2018. And that's when my contract, at that point, I had written all the books on my contract for Quirk. Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires was the last one. And so Berkeley went for this. So this book, I mean, it's not so much a Berkeley Quirk thing. This book just had a very different path. Yeah. And I feel like I'm glad it did. I mean, though there were a lot of frustrations along the way, it wound up being the book it needed to be. And it wasn't there yet when I was trying to sell it before. So, you know, as frustrating as it can be, sometimes this stuff happens for a reason.
I thought it was wonderful. I really enjoyed reading it. I mean, I've loved all of your books that I've read. I am very excited that My Best Friend's Exorcism is being adapted. Is it into a TV series or a film?
No, a film. They're actually shooting it right now.
Oh, excellent. That's one I'm very excited about, because I think that was one of my favorites.
Thanks.
But this one was very different. And that's not a knock on former books, but as you have said, it took a different path. And I think after living through this pandemic that we've been living through, and I think you say this in your afterword, it's almost like we all kind of need that release of knowing we survived.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the book is really, you know, a lot of these movies, the format is a chase. And I really wanted this book to have that same feeling, that it's from A to B. And at the end, you make it out of the woods, the sun's coming up, and you have that feeling of, oh my God, I survived. And that sort of like adrenalized euphoria.
Yeah, I certainly felt it. And one of the things that I definitely loved about it, and this is all just avoiding spoilers, is that you mentioned you want to know what happens to those final girls after they survive. And we know that in this world of the book that you've written, they all had some sort of marketability, their trauma, be it like your standard summer camp slasher film, or be it Gnome Coming. But I think that one thing that you did very well is sort of say, well, yeah, they're all kind of screwed up in their way. As Lynette sort of goes through trying to figure out exactly what's going on and who's targeting them, she sort of, she goes one by one to each of them, and or their paths cross, and it's like, okay, like is this one, like you think that this one, well, she's doing okay because of this, and she's like, yeah, no, not at all. Actually, there's this whole laundry list of issues.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I don't like to speak to trauma just because I'm not a trauma therapist. I write books that I hope are entertaining. But there is an element where that always sort of struck me with slasher movies is that, and also with reality to some extent, is there's a real tendency to encourage people to sort of commercialize their trauma. And sometimes I feel like that's part of someone getting over something, right? You look at, I think it was Educated that came out last year, the year before, the memoir about the woman who grew up in a really bizarre family, and her father who was extremely, violent and everything. And you hope that writing about that and sort of telling her story was some part of her healing process. But you see it even down to, but there's also an element where she is commercializing her trauma. And you even see it down to someone was wrote an op-ed recently that was in the New York Times about selling their trauma as their college essay, that like, oh, I grew up poor and with a single mom, my dad died when I was very young, or whatever it was. And then I was encouraged to turn that into my admissions essay. And there is this element where we like to reduce people to the worst thing that's ever happened to them. But people have lives outside that. Like the worst thing that ever happens to person X, they also have a Saturday night. They also have the best things that happen to them. They have other stuff. And so I really wanted to get at that with the characters in the book that, yes, this overshadows a lot of their lives, but they also, some of them, not all of them, but have lives and have moved on and have other things happen. Sometimes people ask me, oh, you write comedy horror. And I don't really think I do. I think I write reality. Like the worst thing that ever happens to you often happens right after the best thing. Like the most embarrassing moment of your life is also sitting right next to the funniest moment of your life, sitting next to the most tragic moment of your life. I mean, the phone call you get telling you that your mom has died might come right after you just stubbed the hell out of your toe and knocked everything off the dinner table. Like, it's just we don't pick our moments. They don't come with theme music and a soundtrack and a fade in from a sunset. And so I feel like I like to write about that sort of awkwardness of how real life and the sort of mundane everyday stuff sits next to these incredibly heightened, horrific experiences.
So, that all said, is there any look at adapting this into any kind of media?
This was actually Annapurna was going to do it as a TV series, and then they couldn't quite crack it and tried hard, and the option expired. So we're shopping it right now. So yeah, definitely, it looks like it's going to be made into adapted into a film or a TV series.
This is a question I've been asking a lot of authors. And by the way, I want to give a shout out to Becky Spratford for Summer Scares, because she does so much work in getting horror into, you know, libraries. And yeah. I believe you are her first celebrity face of Summer Scares.
Becky and I actually came up with the Summer Scares idea together. She and I have been talking, and she did the legwork to turn it into reality. So yeah, I was happy to jump in. She does a ton.
She's awesome. One of the things I've been asking a lot of authors is, what are you reading? Like, what's something that you enjoy reading?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, whenever I write a book, I usually, instead of doing sort of readings or anything to promote it, I do a show sort of about the book.
Right.
So I usually do all my research afterwards. So right now I'm reading a ton of serial killer and sort of slasher books to get ready to go out with a show for Final Girls this summer. And some of them are really, really terrible. I just read Rockabye Baby, which has a really amazing Lisa Falkenstern painted cover. It's from 1992, I think, maybe a little earlier, of a guy dressed as a nurse holding a broken baby doll. And the book is just a mess. I mean, serial killers were sort of the big trend in the early 90s. And really, if you had a serial killer in your book, it didn't matter how bad the book was, you could sell it. So this thing, it just lifts chunks directly from Thomas Harris's Red Dragon. It adds in this weird hillbilly magic kind of thing. And it's bizarre. But there are good ones out there. I mean, you know, I just reread those first two Thomas Harris books, Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs, because as far as I'm concerned, he didn't write any more books. There's a great book I just finished, because there's a whole trend of books that are told from the killer's point of view. And I'm not sure, I'm sort of tracking those back. And I just read Dorothy Hughes in A Lonely Place from 1947, which is really fantastic. Sort of the big book like that would be The Killer Inside Me, Jim Thompson's 1952 novel, or maybe a little later than that. But she wrote one before him. There's a great book I just read called Night Calls, about a serial killer who murders people and makes a chandelier salesman named Chad listen to him do it over the phone. So,
what?
I mean, you know, I'm just reading all this sort of crazy old stuff. I read when I'm in this sort of phase, I'm reading very little that's new, because I'm all reading the old stuff to sort of get my groundwork in, do my homework.
Awesome. I'm very intrigued by the last one you mentioned.
Oh, Night Calls?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's by Rex Anderson. I think you can still find copies out there.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much for all of those. Everybody write those down, especially that
last one. Not Rockabye Baby.
So are you, after the show, do you have another book that you're thinking of writing?
Oh yeah, I'm in the middle of writing it. I've got a nonfiction book that I've wrapped up, just got off to the printer, that's coming out later this year, about martial arts movies coming to America. So it's a big coffee table art heavy book. And then I've got a novel coming out in 2022, summer or fall, that I'm working on now. So I'm in the middle of writing that right now.
Well, hopefully we'll be talking to you about that, because we love
Absolutely.
Talking to you.
It seems inevitable.
It does, doesn't it? Well, and hopefully by that time, we will all be out of some sort of, we'll be not in the sequel of COVID. We'll be, you know, looking
we'll be
at
done
it
with
in the
it.
Back.
The
yeah,
franchise
we'll be,
will be over.
The franchise will be over, and nobody will ever want to reboot it, you know, because that's not something that we have control over. But still, I want to thank you so much for chatting with us. Final Girl support group is really great. This was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. We welcome back one of our favorite guests.
Thanks for having me. It was great to do this. As usual, it was a blast.
And check out the Final Girl Support Group, due out on July 13th. This episode should drop to coincide with that release. And Syosset Public Library is doing a ton of Summer Scares programming throughout the summer. So if you have not caught on to it, please check our website and see what's up next.
And also, just to jump in, if anyone wants to hear more about Final Girl Support Group or see the show once it's done, it's going to be virtual because a lot of bookstores aren't doing in person. My website is gradyhendrix.com, and that has a whole events page that will be up with everything I'm doing and how to get personalized books signed and all that stuff.
Awesome. Good to know. I'm going to be checking that out for sure. And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.